It's Justin Wong. It's Overseas Experience, your international news update on 95BFM.
Welcome back to The Wire. Yes, and this week for the final international disc of the year, we'll be heading to the good old question on Brexit again.
I had a constructive and useful phone call with Prime Minister Boris Johnson. We discussed the major unsolved topics. Our negotiation teams have been working day and night over the recent days, and despite the exhaustion after almost 1 year of negotiations, and despite the fact that deadlines have been missed over and over, we both think that it is responsible at this point in time to go the extra mile. We have accordingly mandated our negotiators to continue the talks and to see whether an agreement can be reached, even at this late stage. The negotiations continue here in Brussels.
That was European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen on Monday announcing trade talks between the EU and UK would be extended despite a deadline set on last Sunday. While the UK has officially left the EU at the beginning of this year, it still remains in a transitional period within the EU single market, where they are bound to EU rules and regulations on trade while negotiating a trade deal. The transitional period is scheduled to end on December 31st. But there are three stumbling blocks on achieving a UK-EU trade deal, and that reflected fundamental ideological differences between the both sides, with Brussels looking to protect the interests of its own single market and London prioritising their quote-unquote sovereignty. The first of these stumbling blocks is over fisheries policy. So currently, under the EU's common fisheries policy, fishing boats of its member states can have full access of each other's waters apart from the first 12 nautical miles of the coast. What that means in more practical terms, that is both French, let's say French, Belgium and Dutch fishermen can fish all over the coast, including British waters, as long, like in the British Channel, as long as they don't reach 12 nautical miles of the British coast. Despite fishing only counts for only 0.12% of the UK's GDP, and some of them are not even in the interest of most of the EU countries, because some of them are quite landlocked. The political stakes are high for both sides. In the UK, Brexiteers and the fishing industry have long argued for change in this policy in order to maximise the number of fish they could catch within their own waters, because most of the fish caught by the UK fishing industry are exported, such as most of the shellfish are being exported to Spain and France, but it has to import most of its eating fish, like cod. And during the negotiations between the UK and the EU, London wanted to set an exclusive economic zone that stretches up to 200 nautical miles from its coast, which requires other countries to request access if they want to fish in their waters, which means it has more control over who can fish in British waters. But EU ministers have insisted throughout the whole negotiations on maximising extending the status quo, given that so many French, Belgian, Dutch and Irish fishers have long fished at the Channel or at the North Sea or at the Irish Sea for decades since the 1980s. If the UK got what it wanted and it set up a 200-mile exclusive economic zone, European and Irish fishers would lose access to all but a narrow strip of sea close to their coasts. And because of that, some EU officials are maintaining a very hard line on fisheries and have warned that without an agreement on fish, there would be no special access to the single market for the UK, which also means very bad news for British fishermen. As I said earlier, because most of the shellfish caught by British fishers are exported to continental Europe, any tariffs on these items imposed by EU by the EU could be devastating for that industry. But the second stumbling block over the negotiations is over state aid, or what they call the level playing field, to make sure businesses on one side do not gain an unfair advantage over the other in terms of subsidies and other regulations. On one side, Brussels wants fair competition by demanding the UK to continue to align with their own single market regulations over state subsidies for industries, standards over workers' rights, environmental protection, and return of trade with no tariffs or quotas. According to the EU, this is to prevent UK-based companies from having what they call an unfair advantage over European companies in case they offer lower prices because of reduced standards in the UK. The EU also wants a clause to be included so that if the UK does not follow these regulations, the EU can automatically include retaliatory measures such as punitive tariffs to maintain the integrity of the single market. But for the UK, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has already specified very specifically he wanted a zero tariff and zero quota deal, but being able to diverge away from EU regulations. Brexiteers have argued that following EU rules in a post-Brexit trade defeats the entire purpose of leaving the European Union altogether, as they always wanted. Brexit means the UK has the freedom to choose what it wants to do instead of following the rules and regulations of others. But the third and final stumbling block over this trade negotiation is governance, or the mechanisms for enforcing any agreements and resolving disputes. What's happened here is the UK, since leaving the EU, have been very firm that they are a sovereign nation and they will no longer be adhering to rulings made by supranational entities such as the European Court of Justice. Although the EU has withdrawn earlier demands of setting their own watchdog in London to monitor the UK's trade activities to make sure they are not breaking any rules, it wants a stronger arbitration system and powers to retaliate against the UK should they do so. But currently, there are still much to be resolved, and both Prime Minister Boris Johnson and President Ursula von der Leyen have warned it is likely that both sides won't have a deal before the transition period ends at the end of the year. So, what could change at the end of the transition period when the UK fully leaves the EU single market? Well, first of all, both sides would revert to trading on World Trade Organization terms and which means prices could go up for things that the EU buys and sells to and from Europe. The EU has already announced it will introduce some tariffs on incoming UK goods, including a 2.8% tariff on non-agricultural products, and also a 10% tariff on cars and more than 35% tariff on dairy products. The UK has also announced some tariffs on EU goods. But other than trades, there are also areas that could be affected under no deal, and that is just not limited to trade. For example, on healthcare, there is still yet to be a finalised deal on whether Britons living in Europe can enjoy European healthcare. Then there are still some disagreements over driving. On driving licenses, education, could British students continue going to the UK? Did UK British students continue to go to EU universities based in Europe and pay fees according to EU student fees or international student fees? And perhaps most importantly, pensions for a lot of UK residents retiring in the EU, whether will they continue to receive pensions from UK pensions, but when they still remain in the EU.
Overseas Experience with Justin Wong, only on 95 BFM.